And then the second part, I want to glorify the holy name and particularly talk about some Nam Tattva as it relates to Nam Abbas and Shudanam. So in the sixth canto, Shukadeva Goswami and Pariksit Maharaj are having a very exalted and interesting conversation where they're having a dialogue, as is most of the Bhagavatam, where they get to glorify the process of devotional service and in particular the strength of the holy name. So it's a dialogue about how to free ourselves from sinful reactions. And in order to achieve liberation, one must become completely free of sinful reactions at the end of this life. So I wanted to go through this dialogue, which is, it's going to start out talking about just the principle of atonement for sin. And then it's going to go a little bit higher. It's going to be atonement according to karmakanda. And then it's going to go a little bit higher, atonement according to jnanakanda. And then it's going to culminate in the fact that bhakti is the highest and the best form of atonement. So it's sort of similar to the conversation between Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Rai, where Lord Chaitanya is urging him to go deeper and deeper. So start out with more kind of like more of a superficial principle, and then it goes deeper and deeper, which is, I guess it's a very nice and particular technique. So in the sixth canto, Maharaj Pariksit starts out by saying, like, he had just heard about the hellish planets in the fifth canto from Shukadeva Goswami. So in Maharaj Pariksit, when he heard the description at the end of the fifth canto of the different hellish conditions of life, he was very much concerned with how to liberate the conditioned souls from the clutches of Maya and take them back home, back to Godhead. Therefore, he reminded his spiritual master, Shukadeva, about the Nivritti Marg, or path of liberation, which he had described in the second canto. So Maharaj Pariksit wants to know, okay, we heard about these horrible places, these hellish planets that exist within our universe, but now, you know, I'm interested to know how can a conditioned soul avoid going there. So when Shukadeva Goswami heard this question from his disciple, he became very happy that his disciple asked such a question. My dear king, this is Shukadeva speaking, your question is glorious because it is very beneficial for all kinds of people. The answer to this question is the prime subject matter for hearing, and it is approved by all transcendentalists. So Pariksit goes on, O great sage Shukadeva, unless the living entity is freed from the infection of the material modes of nature, he receives different types of bodies in which to enjoy or suffer. In other words, he continues in the wheel of samsara, in the wheel of birth and death. O greatly fortunate and opulent Shukadeva, now kindly tell me how human beings may be saved from having to enter hellish conditions in which they suffer terrible pains. So that's a good question, right? Shukadeva Goswami replied, my dear king, if before one's next death, whatever impious acts one has performed in this life with his mind, words, and body are not counteracted through proper atonement, one will certainly enter the hellish planets after death and undergo terrible suffering. Here Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur states that, you know, Pariksit was already a pure devotee, and they could have easily gone right to bhakti, and they could have easily gone right to 1866 in the Bhagavad Gita, Saradhamam Parityaja Mamekam Sharanam Rajaha Aham Tvam Sarva Apevyo Moksha Ishami Masuchaha. So they could have right away gone to, if you surrender to Krishna, Krishna promises, I shall free you from all sinful reactions and give you liberation. But they didn't go to that directly. They wanted to kind of, you know, build up to that. So first they discussed the process of just atonement according to karmakanda, which, you know, many people still do, especially Hindus in India. So first we'll talk about karmakanda atonement, and then we'll go higher into Jnanakanda, and then we'll culminate with Bhakti and the Holy Name. For Karmakanda, there are 80 authorized scriptures, such as the Manu Samhita, which are known as Dharma Shastras. In these scriptures, one is advised to counteract his sinful acts by performing other types of food of action. This was the path first recommended by Shukadeva to Maharaj Parikshit. And actually, it is a fact that one who does not take to devotional service must follow the decision of these scriptures by performing pious acts to counteract impious acts. This is known as atonement. So for example, a man who has committed murder, he should be hanged in atonement in order to nullify that sin. If the disease is very serious, the medicine must be very strong. By killing a murderer, the government shows mercy to him, because if a murderer is not killed in this life, he will be killed and forced to suffer many times in future lives. So this is an example of atonement. And even in India today, the Hindu community often takes advice from expert scholars regarding how to counteract sinful activities. Some of you who grew up in that background can probably, your family probably did that. In Christianity, there's also the process of atonement of going to confession, to confess your sins. And then once you've done that, you receive the prescribed medicine from the priest, which is a certain amount of prayers that you have to say, you know, Hail Marys or other prayers, to atone for your sin. So Maharaj Pariksha replies to this. One may know that sinful activity is injurious for him because he actually sees that a criminal is punished by the government and rebuked by people in general, and because he hears from scriptures about the hellish planets. However, in spite of such knowledge, one is forced to commit sins again and again, even after performing acts of atonement. Therefore, what is the value of such atonement? So we often give the example here of the elephant bathing and then coming out and pouring dirt on himself again. So basically, the sinful tendency is not eliminated. The tendency to commit sinful acts through atonement, nor is the seed of the sinful reaction eliminated. So next they go to Jnanakanda, which is a step higher from just atonement according to Karmakanda. Shukadeva says, "My dear king, since acts meant to neutralize impious actions are also fruitive, they will not release one from the tendency to act fruitively." So the tendency will remain. Trying to counteract one action through another is useless because this will not uproot one's desires. Thus, even though one may superficially seem pious, he will undoubtedly be prone to act impiously. So nothing has changed in a person's behavior. Right? They may have atoned for that particular sin, but the tendency is still there. Therefore, real atonement is enlightenment in perfect knowledge, Vedanta, by which one understands the supreme absolute truth. So let's step higher, because with Jnanakanda, a person can at least avoid going to hell. So it's a step up. However, the seed of the sinful reaction is not destroyed through Jnanakanda. And here's Shukadeva and Pariksha will explain this. The platform of Jnanakanda, one is saved from hellish life, but one is still not completely free from infection. Which infection are we talking about? The infection of the material modes of nature. The difficulty is that on the platform of jnana, one thinks himself that he has been liberated and has become Narayan or Bhagavan. Because of ignorance, one speculatively thinks himself liberated from material contamination, although actually he is not. Therefore, even if one rises to Brahma jnana, understanding of Brahman, one nevertheless falls down because of not taking proper shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. And also by Jnanakanda, the sins are not completely uprooted. A person in Jnanakanda, he may be temporarily purified of all sins performed with his body, words, and mind. But these sins are like dried leaves of a creeper beneath a bamboo tree, which may be burned by fire, although the roots remain. So the roots of the sinful reactions remain. Only through devotional service are the actual roots of sinful reactions uprooted. The rare person who has adopted complete, unalloyed devotional service to Krishna can uproot the weeds of sinful actions with no possibility that they will revive. He can do this simply by discharging devotional service, just as the sun can immediately dissipate fog by its rays. Because the root of the sinful desire is not destroyed in the heart of a person who is cultivating knowledge or jnana, but who has no taste for devotional service, there is a possibility that his sinful desires will reappear. It's interesting because we'll talk about the case of Ajamil and how he chanted Namabhas and achieved liberation. And it's in the story, it says how when he became attracted to the prostitute, it was due to his past. So meaning like it was due to his past life. So saying that the roots of sinful desires from some past life had remained and he was attracted to a prostitute. So we'll talk about the story of Ajamil a little bit. So they go on to say that although not even having fully realized Krishna, if one even once surrenders completely onto him, this becomes the true method of atonement. Who have become attracted to his name, form, qualities, and pastimes, and they become completely freed from all sinful reactions. Even in dreams, such surrendered souls did not see Yamaraj or his order carriers, who are equipped with ropes to bind the sinful. In that shloka, in the Sanskrit, the word sakrit is used, which is significant because it indicates only once. If one, even once, sincerely surrenders to Krishna, he is saved, even if by chance he falls down by committing sinful acts. So we all know the story of Ajamil. And, you know, he had grown up a brahmana and was trained very nicely by his parents. But it says in the shloka that due to his past, because he had sinful roots, within his consciousness, he became attracted to a prostitute. He became very fallen, and he begot 10 sons in the womb of the prostitute. And at the end of his life, it was said that at the age of 88, he had a young son. So, I mean, that's, you can imagine, you know, how sinful he had been. So at the end of his life, he was on his deathbed. He had a very young son, Narayan, and he named him Narayan, owing to his good fortune, some sukriti there. So as he was dying, the Yamadutas came because, you know, he had been very sinful. And then out of fear, he just chanted Namabhas. He just chanted for his son. He didn't even chant for God, he just chanted Narayan, just for his son, so it was Namabhas. And when he chanted, the Vishnudutas appeared, and you know, they told the Yamadutas, no, this person is not qualified to go to Yamaraj. So it said that he chanted out of great fear when the Yamadutas arrived. And so in that fear, he was taking shelter. You know, even though it was just his son, it wasn't God, but he was taking shelter out of that great fear, and he chanted like almost purely that name of Narayan. And so we can imagine like how scary that must be if the Yamadutas come to you. You know, we'll never experience that ourselves, but it's quite a real thing. There's something called, you know, terminal restlessness. It's an actual term that they use in the nursing world, where the nurses are actually trained for like when they you know, they don't know what's going on, but the Yamadutas are coming to take away, you know, the dying person. And they exhibit all sorts of, like, you know, they're extremely scared, you know. And it's described the Yamadutas are very scary looking, and they have boar-like tusks. If you ever seen the tusks of a boar, they're about, you know, like 4 or 5 inches long. And I was reading a story recently where it said that there was one, a person was there and they could perceive, and the person was trying to tell them, the dying person, that there's one like floating outside his window. You know, so if you can imagine how scary that must be, like you're totally helpless, you're dying, you're weak, you know, nobody can help you. Like the nurses cannot help you, your relatives cannot help you, yourself, you cannot help yourself. So like nobody can help you. You're emaciated, you're suffering like the throes of death, from which I understand are like pretty horrible, you know, hopefully not for us, but for people out there. So you're in that horrible, horrible, scared condition, and then like this creature's come, you know, and you see this creature like floating outside your window. So if you can imagine that, how scary that must be. You know, and this creature is like communicating to you like through the heart, like, I'm here for you. I'm here to take you to the next place. You know, how horrible that must be. So when Ajamil saw the Yamadutas, he just cried out in complete fear, Narayan! And this was Namabas, and it was sufficient enough to summon the Vishnudutas. And the Vishnudutas told the Yamadutas, no, this man does not qualify for going to Yamaraj because, you know, he has chanted the holy name, and therefore he has been freed from his sinful reactions. And then there's an ecstatic exchange between the Yamadutas and the Vishnudutas, where, you know, the Yamadutas are like a little bit bewildered, like, what do you, you know, they didn't know that there was somebody higher than Yamaraj, you know, so they're like, you know, what's going on? And the Vishnudutas explain to the Yamadutas, like, the power of the holy name. And that if a person chants it, you know, even not perfectly purely, they are eligible for liberation, and they do not belong to go to Yamaraj. The Yamaduta said, you know, this person has not undergone atonement. Therefore, because of his sinful life, we must take him to the presence of Yamaraj for punishment. There, according to the extent of his sinful acts, he will be punished and thus purified. So we can understand that even the Yamadutas they're performing a service, you know, for the jiva souls. They're enabling them to receive the proper purification, like, you know, through Yamaraj and the hellish conditions. So, you know, even them in their, like, frightening demeanor and appearance, it's like they're even performing a service that is beneficial for the jiva soul. You know, but we don't want that program. So the Vishnudutas have forbidden the Yamadutas to take Ajamil. And the Vishnudutas tell the Yamadutas, we see perfectly that Ajamil should not be punished, although you're attempting to take him to Yamaraj. It was due to Ajamil's glorifying the holy name of the Supreme Lord that he was not punishable. The Vishnudutas explained this as follows. Simply by once chanting the holy name of Narayan, this Brahmana has become free from the reactions of his sinful life. Indeed, he has been freed not only from the sins of this life, but from the sins of many, many thousands of other lives. He has already undergone true atonement for all his sinful actions. If one atones according to the directions of the Shastras, one does not actually become free from sinful reactions. But if one chants the holy name of the Lord, even a glimpse of such chanting can immediately free one from all sins. As they were saying this, the Vishnudutas released the Ajamil from the ropes of the Yamadutas and left for their own abode. Then it says further, further in the chapter how Ajamil still had to receive like further purification in order to be able to enter into the spiritual world. So it's not that he just chanted Namabhas once and boom, he was ready to go to Vaikuntha. He was freed from his sinful reactions, but he did have to receive more purification until he was qualified to enter into Vaikuntha. So it's said that he was purified by hearing the discussions of the Yamadutas and the Vishnudutas. He received purification there, and he also received, very importantly, sadhu sangha through the Vishnudutas. And through that sadhu sangha, his bhakti, he became like even more eligible for further bhakti, and he went to Haridwar, and there he engaged himself in complete unalloyed devotional service. And after some time, I guess when he was purified and ready to go to Vaikuntha, at that time the Vishnudutas returned and got him with the golden airplane, and he was ready to enter into Vaikuntha. Okay, so I just want to talk a little bit about Nam Tattva and as it relates to Namabhas. And so we just heard some glories of Namabhas and what it can do, but can somebody say like why Namabhas is not for us? Why, you know, if Namabhas is so powerful, and you know, why can't we just chant the holy name once and, you know, become liberated? Like why, you know, why is that not the program for us as practicing devotees? Would somebody like to say?
Because
Right. Helps us to be at the state, right. But Namavas does not produce love for Krishna.
Thank you, yes. Namavas does not produce Krishna prema. And also, Namavas is Namavas because it's done unintentionally. So one who performs Namavas is, he does it innocently because he is not aware of Nam Tattva. But one who is aware of Nam Tattva, that Namabhas is not for him. Because why? Can somebody say why? Okay, I'll say. because we create offenses to the holy name. What is offense number 7? Chanting the holy name with the idea of committing sinful acts,
strength
of chanting the holy name, committing sinful acts in the strength of chanting the holy name. So therefore, that's not for us. You know, we have to avoid the 10 offenses in order to reach Shuddhanam. So Namabhas only acts on the platform of ignorance or inattentiveness. Basically, unintentionally it acts. So it's not for us. There's a very ecstatic conversation in the Jiva Dharma where they talk about Namabhas. It's mentioned that when the name is chanted impurely with a desire for sense enjoyment, I just want to touch upon Namaparad, which is the word Namabhas. When the name is chanted impurely with a desire for sense enjoyment, liberation, or based on a Mayavada conception, that is Namaparad. Somewhere between Namaparad and Shuddhanam is Namabhas. It is called Namabhas when that name is chanted impurely because one is in ignorance. That is to say, one is under the control of illusion and inattentiveness. So it's done innocently. Okay, and then they go on to give 4 examples of Namabhas. So one is to indicate something else, and this is Sanketa. One is jokingly, Parihasa, antagonistically, Stopa, or even disrespectfully, Hela. Learned people know that these 4 types of shadow Namabhas destroy unlimited sins. Those who are ignorant of Nam Tattva and Sambandha Tattva perform these four kinds of Namabhas. That's not us. So, and actually quote a Jamil as an example of Sanketya Namabhas, which is uttering Bhagavan's name when alluding to something else. For example, he called his son Narayan. So Sanketya Namabhas is alluding to something else. And another example is when a Muslim sees a pig and they show hatred and exclaim, Harama, Harama. This exclamation, Harama, contains the two words, Ha and Rama, so the person uttering the word, Harama, also attains deliverance from a cycle of birth and death as a result of taking that Sanketya Nam. And then in terms of the two characteristics of chanting antagonistically or disrespectfully, the disciple Vijay in the Jiva Dharma, he says, but isn't it an offense to chant Harinam antagonistically or disrespectfully? And the guru replies, it is an offense if one is disrespectful knowingly and with bad intention, but if one is disrespectful unknowingly, it is namabhas. If one is performing namabhas, what must he do so that his namabhas may become shudanam? So that's for us. The suitable engagement is that he takes the association of Shuddha Bhaktas, which in Ajamil's case were the Vishnu Dutas. He took their association and then he became purified through that. If he stays in their company and chants Nam according to their order and guidance, he will then acquire a taste for Shuddha Bhakti. The name that appears on the tongue at that time will be Shuddha Nam. Satsanga is the only cause of the jiva's good fortune. That is why the Lord of our life, Sri Gaurangadeva, instructed Sanatana Goswami that satsanga is certainly the root of bhakti. So he must take the association of Shuddha Bhaktas in order to come to the platform of Shuddha Nam. And can anybody say, and we'll just finish with this point, can anybody say like what else needs to be done in order to come to Shuddha Nam? You take the association of Shuddha Bhaktas and what else? Avoid the 10 offenses, correct? And then lastly, Lord Chaitanya gives us in the Shikshastakam the last instruction of how to come to the platform of Shudanam. Trinadapi sunichena tarodapi sahishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. One should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. He should become more tolerant than the tree. He should give all respect to others and expect none for himself. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. Any discussion points or questions?
Thank you very much for a wonderful class. When you were talking about the Muslim, when he saw the pig that says Haram, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what was the result of him saying that?
Well, it was namabhas, and mm-hmm. they could achieve freedom from sins.
Freedom from sins, okay. So
I mean, there were four categories of the way that namabhas is chanted.
Mm-hmm.
So one is alluding to something else, which was the case of Ajamil.
Right.
He was alluding to his son.
Mm-hmm.
One was jokingly, and one was antagonistically, and one was disrespectfully. So even if said in that mood, because it's unknowing, that's not for us. It's unknowing. It's namabhas.
But it creates something that will possibly grow, because I've heard different things. Like I've heard that, you know, unknowingly people are chanting, even if it says, the Ramada Inn or whatever, because it says Ram, then you make some advancement. But at the same time, Prabhupada says, if you don't if you don't get that, the name from a bona fide guru, then it doesn't have much potency. So how does that work? It has some potency, but not
full potency.
Is that the way it works?
Well, I'm just going to take a guess here, but maybe Prangavinda Prabhu can answer that definitively. But I think that Nam has potency independently of, you know, and that's the whole point of Namabhas. You know, they're not getting it from a guru. They see a pig and they say it, you know. And it has the potency of Namabhas according to Jiva Dharma. So I think the Nam in itself has potency. And would you like to comment on that question?
That's a good answer. Holy name is Krishna, is always merciful. So anybody comes in contact with holy name will be benefited, whether they have a connection or not connection. Because at the bottom level, our connection with Krishna is constitutional, also cognitional, not conditional. So constitutional, to revive, that connection is required guru. A cognitional, that whether they know or don't know, still they will be benefited. But not Krishna prem, but they will get rid of the, like liberation. Like you can say,
yes.
When Giriraj Maharaj was here, I don't know, a few years back, I forgot. And in his class, he mentioned something that he asked Prabhupada that when he chants, it's very difficult for him to control the mind, it gets destructive. So he said, Prabhupada told him, are you trying? He said, yes. What are you trying? Then Giriraj Maharaj said to Prabhupada, I'm trying to not to commit offenses, but when I'm chanting, but it's very difficult, the mind just create unnecessary thought. And Prabhupada said, that is Namabhas stage. It's not bad. Now you try harder and you will get out of it. So in that connection, the constitutional function will not act, but cognitional function will act.
Will it give some more credits towards eventually getting the association of Shuddha Bhaktas?
Of course.
So,
of course,
the Sukriti will be built up, but they will be liberated from sins. I mean, according to Jiva Dharma,
yes,
is what it says.
They will.
Learned persons say that these four
this
types
Bhagavatam,
of Namabhas.
This Sankirtan Parihakshamba
6.2.49.
Yeah, exactly. It's in the sixth canto. It's in the Bhagavatam, and it's also quoted in the Jiva Dharma. Learned people know that these four types of shadow Namabhas, which is to indicate something else, jokingly, antagonistically, even disrespectfully, destroy unlimited sins. So yes, according to Jiva Dharma, yes, it is so in the Bhagavatam.
You know, recently I was meditating on this offense. So there is many definitions I was trying to collect.
And one definition, first definition, Jiva Goswami Pad gives that utterance of name which is consciously made with enmity in heart.
Right, conscious.
That's scary. So I have to be responsible. It's not nobody can be blamed for my own not getting out of the offense. It is me, myself.
Yes.
I have to be acknowledged and then I have to literally regret for it and come to that point to have a correction that I want to. So offense is actually consciously made, which is...
Yes. Namabhas only, as I was saying, refers to doing something unknowingly. But because we know the offenses, and particularly number 7, chanting on the strength of the holy name, We know we recite it every weekend in Mangalarati. So no, that's not for us. Like, we very consciously have to avoid the offenses, like very consciously, and work on our consciousness and our demeanor and our mood. You know, otherwise for us, that's Nama Parad, you know, and that will definitely set us back. So Nama Parad is very bad.
I was just going to say that the Ajamil story, he doesn't have any gurus, so it's self-explanatory whether or not.
No, he has guru.
He has a family
guru. She said Vishnu Dutta.
Vishnu Dutta? Who said this? Someone says
the
question.
He said the association of devotees. Oh. Who means the association of pure Vaishnava?
But one thing with Pushkar Prabhu means he uttered it before he had.
Yeah.
Before he achieved the association.
He was saying it all along. I mean, Narayan, this, Narayan, that.
Yeah, it was said in the commentary, like one of our acharyas has said he was actually building up pious credits throughout his life because he was chanting his son's name, so he was building it up throughout his whole life.
But still, I mean, there's different types of, if we just say to some new person that Nama Bas and, you know, the Muslim, or you see the Sinarama or whatever it is, Harim Riktam, Jiva Goswami gives that, you're saying Hari, it's a Muslim word, Harim Riktam, but, and it's totally separated. Vyabahita, there's all kinds of locals explaining it. But there's so many gray areas, because you can rise pretty high, though, on, like, we're not on Shudanam stage, so just to say that it's not for us, that's true, but we're not on Shudanam, most of us.
Oh,
so,
okay, well, let me clarify.
Where are we?
Oh, well, let me clarify that when I say it's not for us. Thank you. That's actually a nice subtlety there. Yeah, we may be chanting Nama Bas because we are not on the Shudanam platform yet. Maybe, who knows? But we're somewhere in between there, right? But the point that I was trying to make, and I'm glad you brought it up, is we're aspiring for Shudanam. We're not there yet, but we are aspiring for it. So we have to avoid the offenses. We have to become humbler than a straw in the street, more tolerant than a tree.
Nama Bas is not just unknowingly. That's all I'm trying to say, isn't it? Not just unknowingly.
No, it's not. Well, it's in between.
Both.
Can be both.
Unintentional.
No, but we are intentional. So it's intentional, unintentional.
Well, but we're not intentionally. We're not intentionally trying for Nama Bas.
That's not our goal.
We're intentionally trying for Shudanam. If we happen to be Nama Bas because of, it said, like, inattentiveness or illusion, we're not doing that intentionally. That's just, like, you know, unintentionally. So that's a nice distinction. Thank you. Mother of Aivati.
It's a lively discussion. Because you... The verse itself, I just loved how it said, you know, by sneezing, if you call out the name of Narayana, something like that. It's like, okay, that would be unintentional, like a devotee that practices regularly chanting might chant at such a time. But what I thought of, that I just wanted to say before the time runs out, you mentioned nurses know about this terminal restlessness. So it reminded me, I was visiting New Vrindavan, and I met a woman whose husband is an initiated devotee. She's not, but she obviously is favorable and works as a nurse. Mm-hmm. So she had an experience. She said whenever there was someone who appeared to be leaving their body, if no one was around, she would go to them. And it happened one day. She saw this person, and he was on the verge of leaving, no one there. So she went over, and very quietly by his ear, she said, Hare Krishna. And he opened his eyes, looked at her, and said, Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, and left his body.
How fortunate.
And she said, then they you know, called the family and everything like that. And the family was like from an hour away. And normally, rigor mortis would have set in by the time they came. But even an hour later, his body was still pliable. It was like quite extraordinary passing. I just wanted to share that.
Thank you so much for that. Yeah, in that story, I recently read an article about my devotee who said, like, the Yamadutas came for her relatives because I guess he was very sinful. He was a hunter and a womanizer. So I guess, you know, they came, But it did. The story culminated in he left. He did end up leaving like auspiciously. So I guess they left because she was there chanting. And so I guess in the end, like, they didn't take him, but they came.
So. Yeah, I recall he actually told her they left.
Yeah.
They left.
You read the story, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier that Gyanakand awards one prevents one from going to hell.
Yes.
However, how is that possible? Since they could, that individual could still become contaminated by the modes and commit sinful activity and then warrant such a destination.
Well, my understanding is, and maybe Prahlad Govinda Prabhu can clarify, but my understanding is, they can take birth again, but they won't go to the hellish planets. You know, like they'll take a birth, but it won't be, they won't go to hell. I mean, that is like two different things.
Just by jnana.
By jnana, yeah.
Oh, I mean, we meet people who are jnanis and mayavadis.
Oh, yeah, okay, I wanted to get clarification on that. Maybe one of you can say this, but...
Just saying that in
CC, the details given that... I think there must be a distinction between mayavadis and brahmavadis.
So many animals, and then there's some humans. Out of humans, very few follow Veda. Out of that, some are Gyanis. Out of many, Karmis, Durlab, what is it? Another Bengali. So, Echo, Gyani, Mukta. Out of so many Gyanis, one is a liberator. So we can't just give a overall thing, because there are Gyanis, but only one out of many is liberated. Manushanam Sahasesu, like that.
Well, in saying they don't go to hell.
Like this, many things explaining the subtle differences. You could be a Gyani, Bahunam Janmanamante. Many times Gyani takes a birth and then he'll get more elevated till finally, Bahunam Janman, many births, he'll become Bhakta. Therefore, Prabhupada said, why wait so many life as Gyani just now, chant? Don't become Gyani. Nahi Gyanena Satrasham. Well, no. In the 11th chapter, no Ganina, no Tapasya, but not by Gan, not by Tapasya, but only by Bhakti. No Sadhyati Mam Yoga, not by Yoga.
In that chapter, yeah, it just said the Jnanis will avoid going to hell. But
yeah,
the roots of their sinful reactions are not completely burnt.
But then there's all these weird verses.
So actually,
say,
like, they're not liberated.
By a Vaishnav Guru. Pasuyonim, you can still enter the body of an animal in next life if you don't get initiated by Vaishnava Guru. It's so many things.
But still, it's not a hellish planet, though, right? Like, I mean,
yeah, maybe animals.
Yeah, it didn't say in the chapter that jnanis would attain liberation because they're not chanting the holy name, but it said that they would avoid the hellish planets. That's what it said. It said the Jnanis would avoid hellish planets.
Would you read today?
Yeah.
Sorry?
It was in the Bhagavatam from the sixth canto. It was the conversation between Shukadeva and Parikshit saying how Karmakanda, Atoma, and then Jnanakanda, and then Bhakti. And it's saying how with atonement using Karmakanda, you could still go to hell. But with atonement using Jnanakanda, you can at least avoid hell. It didn't get to liberation yet. You can avoid hell. And then only through bhakti you can receive.
Jnanakanda, Kedala, Vishirabhanda, all are possible for you to avoid Jnanakanda.
Over here.
But she's making a particular point. Jnanis are there.
But it didn't say that they the Jnanis attain liberation. We didn't get to that yet. Like, only through bhakti can one achieve liberation. Jnanis, the roots of their sinful reactions are not completely burnt up. But they avoid going to hellish planets. So that was the point.
Yeah.
They didn't get liberated.
Even an actual kami avoids hell if you follow all the rules. Whereas we refer to many people that everyone has kami, but they're de-kamis.
Yeah, forget about even performing atonement.
Very nice.